several miles off the main highway, tucked away in a secluded canyon on prime vineyard property, stands a rustic barn that was built many decades before the vines around it were planted. In that barn, a sophisticated broadcast and recording studio has been built. The barn also has a well-hidden root cellar stocked with many of the world's most exceptional wines, only to be shared with guests who secretly come to offer their insights and tell their stories. Guests are sworn to secrecy and are shuttled to the studio aboard a John Deere tractor. Those who cannot make the journey in person are interviewed by satellite hookup, and sometimes the crew simply sneaks away with microphones in hand and interviews guests in barrel rooms, wine cellars, and other magical places. All of this is done like clockwork every single week, so that we can bring you another episode of Grape Encounters Radio.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow, talk to me.
Okay, so if you've been listening to Grape Encounters for the past couple of months, you know that I have embarked upon a very exciting new adventure. We not only talk the talk, but we also walk the walk now. We've created the Grape Encounters Emporium, where you can come in and see what I mean about good value wines that really taste amazing. And you'll also get to experience some of the little games that we play with wine. I've told you for as long as we've been on the air, it's your wine. You paid for it. You can do whatever you want with it. And one of the things that we're doing at the Grape Encounters Emporium is we really do play with the wines. I've been telling you for years, you know what? It's okay to blend your own wines at home. You know, having said that, you don't want to go into it just willy-nilly. You need to know a little bit about what you're doing. But I got to tell you, we came up with the Bordello blend at the Grape Encounters Emporium. That was the first blend that we're now pouring, and that's Bordelleaux. That's because there are three Bordeaux wines in there and some other stuff that we'll talk about in just a moment. Well, I recently got to share one of my blends with a winemaker who makes some absolutely stunning wines. He works with some very big labels, but he's got his own label, and he's got a Merlot that will make you think that you've died and gone to heaven. It is so absolutely delicious. His name is Adam Lazar, and he tasted one of my blends. I'm going to make a blend for him today because I was surprised when Adam said, you know what, it's okay, you can blend with my wine anytime. You didn't have a problem, Adam, and welcome to Grape Encounters.
Hey, thank you, David. I really appreciate it. Yeah, you know what? You bought the wine. You can do anything you want with it.
I can. Yep. I can bathe in it.
Only if you send photos.
You don't want that. All right. So let's talk just a minute about blending. And while we're doing this, I'm going to actually make you the Bordello blend.
That would be fabulous.
Okay? Do you want to visit a Bordello with me?
Could we? Yeah,
all right.
That'd be great.
Okay. I'm going to start with your Merlot, but just talk about blending and why it's become so incredibly popular in the really very recent history. Because 10 years ago, you didn't see the number of blends on the shelf that you do now.
That's interesting that you say that. Blending has been going on for centuries. Now, in France and many of the old world countries, you've got a number of different grape varieties that are planted in the same vineyard, particularly France, where you get field blends. You get a number of different types of grape varieties that are all crushed together. And technically, it's a blend, although the wines are made as one. Winemakers have been blending for a long time. It's just only recently have people been interested in what I put inside my Cabernet. I mean, if it says Cabernet on the label, technically, it only has to be 75% Cabernet. I, for one, love putting Merlot, Cabernet Franc, and I often don't talk about it. But people have become very aware of blends.
It's Adam's dirty little secret.
It's Adam's dirty little secret. Oh, I've got a bunch
of them.
By the
way, I just put your Merlot in. I put your wine in first.
I can see. It's beautiful.
I'm using all the right tools, right? Graduated cylinders, the whole thing here.
Well, the fact that they're clean disturbs me a little bit.
This Cabernet, by the way, that I'm going to use is a Chilean cab from Santa Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great example of a really good cab that you can buy for under $30.
No, and I think it's a fantastic cab.
Feel how heavy this bottle is, huh?
15 pounds, what the hell? I think it's a great wine. For me, the Santa Carolina has a beautiful little Chilean herbal thread over the top. It's got structure, raspberry and cherries. And I think it's really a pure example of really good cab from Chile.
So going back to the blending for a second, though, what do you think about people blending at home? You probably do it.
Oh, yeah. You know what? You can catch me in a restaurant anytime. If I have two bottles on the table, I'll often put the two together to see if I can make a better wine.
Is it really as scientific as a lot of people would lead you to believe, because there's like 1% of this and 2% of that?
You know, I've been making wine for about 24 years now. And since I was like 4 years old, right? Honestly, I've never been able to tell what 1% can do. I would challenge pretty much anybody. A couple percent different is a different story. And in days past, I would have no problem blending maybe 2 or 3% Chardonnay into my Pinot Noir if I thought that the fruit in the Pinot needed to be brightened up a little bit. Particularly things like Petit Syrah, which can be very dark and inky and one-dimensional, having a little Syrah in there broadens the fruit base.
All that noise back here. I'm pulling corks in other bottles.
Yeah, it's one of the most beautiful sounds in the world.
But the thing that I think is remarkable is that you really can go into a restaurant and like order 3 glasses of wine and do a little blending and come up with 2 nice, healthy glasses of wine.
You know, if you're at a restaurant that's got a sommelier and it's pretty expensive, they probably frown upon that. But, you know, I order a bottle of wine, I'm not particularly pleased with it, and I order a second bottle of wine.
You know what they really frown upon is I'll say to them, can I just have a little taste of your Petit Verdot?
Yeah. And they have to open a fresh bottle for you. Yeah,
they never take that taste glass away. Okay, we're going now to Argentina.
Okay.
To Filas.
Ah,
and
Malbec.
A really nice little Malbec. It retails for around $22, even under that. Mm-hmm. And we're adding that in. So far, what we have here are 3 Bordeaux varietals coming from 3 different countries.
You know what? I think that's going to make it even more interesting.
That's what makes it so much fun, because there are different styles of winemaking going on there.
Yep. No, the blend is really the key. The 2 most important things in winemaking is really when you pick your grapes, exactly getting the right flavors, and the final blend. It's very rarely that a wine from the grape, unless you're working with one of these stellar vineyards that are really, really famous and well-known for their quality, it's very rare that you make a complete wine in one shot. So oftentimes, even if you make your Cabernet in 2 different lots and 2 different styles with different oak, you have 2 different blending components. It might all be Cabernet, but having the luxury in a winery of having different blending components is important, because at the end of the day, you don't want your wine to taste like everybody else in the neighborhood. And also, you want it to taste good.
I mean, isn't it like going to Starbucks in a way? You go to Starbucks, not everybody wants the same cup of coffee, right? Somebody wants soy, somebody wants non-fat, somebody wants half calf, half decaf. We customize at Starbucks. Why not do the very same thing with wine? And by the way, Starbucks is going to start carrying wine in most of their stores, so I wonder if they'll let us do that, huh?
Wouldn't that be nice?
All right, I'm pouring in a Zinfandel now. Is this a sin to pour Zin into what now is currently a Bordeaux blend?
Nope.
Why not?
Because if it tastes good, that's all that matters.
So you're just saying it's sort of like the if it feels good, do it idea with wine.
Well, the feel good, do it can get you arrested. In actuality, you're putting a wine that has a lot of raspberry and mouthfeel into a wine that already has a lot of dark fruit and tannins. And the final blend may be absolutely fabulous.
Now, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do something that I thought would be unheard of, but maybe not so much.
It is not as unheard of as you think.
Tell them what I'm putting in the wine now.
David is getting ready to pour a little port made from 3 of the traditional Portuguese varieties into it, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with that in a blend. You add a little sweetness, a little fatness to the wine, and viola,
I forgot something to stir with. I'm not sticking my finger in there. I've got a pen here. All right. You don't mind, do you? The wine kills the germs,
just
right?
Just as long as the cap's
all right,
not
get your glass over here, and all really right. Quickly, tell the listeners, because we got just 1 minute.
Oh, sure.
What? I know. It goes fast, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Tell them maybe some simple guidelines if they want to do some blending at home.
Yeah, well, you know
I'm pouring you a glass of boy, that was a...
That's a healthy pour.
I made a big batch.
I got to come to your restaurant. Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, man, this smells great. Absolutely beautiful. You know, the guidelines are you familiarize yourself with each of the individual wines you want to blend. Everyone has a strength. If it has a very strong 4 palate of fruit, try something that's got a good mid palate or something that's got a great finish. There is always a hole that you can fill with a wine.
Get it in balance to your taste.
Get it in balance
right?
to your taste. Not everyone has the same palate.
If you love a wine but it's a little too tannic for you, then
soften it up.
Soften it up with something
a little Merlot, a little Zin maybe.
A Lazar Merlot though. If it's a little too acidic, then what?
Oh, then you can soften it up with something that's got lower acid, certain Syrahs perhaps, or even a little port.
Little port.
Little port.
All right, rate my wine.
Oh man. Should I have a really snobby, develop that accent? And
well, if you want to, yeah. Be truthful.
Do you have a censor button?
Why?
It is absolutely, it was absolutely effing fantastic.
Really?
Yeah, it's really, really good. Got a lot of dark fruit. It's lush. I mean, a huge lush mouthfeel. There's a tiny bit of sweetness on the back end, which I think is really pleasant. It's a complete wine from start to finish. It tastes almost seamless. Good acid, lifts the fruit in the back end, wraps around your tongue. I mean, I'd drink this at dinner. It'd be a fabulous steak wine. It's like a black cherry Jolly Rancher candy. It's just got this richness and fruit-driven yumminess.
Praise from Caesar is praise indeed. Hey, tell us really quickly about some of the big-name brands that you work with.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My day job, the one that actually pays money as opposed to making Lazar wines, I'm director of winemaking for the Wine Hooligans. It's a big startup out of Santa Rosa. And I oversee Cycles Gladiator. It was a brand I started at Hahn 11 years ago.
Very well-known brand.
And yeah, and we just bought it from Hahn this last year, so I'm back making that wine.
You got your baby back. Man, that is so awesome. Adam Lazar of Lazar Wines, or Lazar the Wine God. You can get the Lazar wines at the Grape Encounters Emporium in Atascadero, California, or you can go online to
LazarWines.com.
That's going to do it for this little visit with Adam. I appreciate it so much.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here, really.
We got a little commercial break. I think we can just get through this glass of Bordello in time for the next segment.
I'm working on it.
You're having a Grape Encounter with David Wilson. How Merlot can you go?
We like to talk about wine.
If you love wine, then you probably love to travel too. And there are two places you should really visit soon. The best part is, you don't even have to pack a bag or leave your house. If you're looking for adventures in wine, log on to grapeencounters.com. There you'll find an audio library of more than 300 stories that will take you virtually anywhere you want to go. At grapeencounters.com, you'll find short subjects as well as full stories. All audio can be downloaded with one click, and you'll be amazed at the broad range of subject matter. Another place you really should visit is our Facebook group page. Simply search for Grape Encounters Radio or click on the link on our website. The Grape Encounters Radio group has become a formidable place for wine lovers to exchange ideas, introduce products, and share upcoming events. If you're not already a group member, then join the party on Facebook. Grape Encounters is more than a radio broadcast. It's a family of like-minded, fun-loving, unpretentious wine lovers. Come fill up your glass today.
This is David Wilson, and I want you to sail with me from Rome to Barcelona on one of the most luxurious cruise ships in the world, the completely reimagined Regent Seven Seas Mariner. Every year, I take listeners on a luxury voyage sure to create unforgettable memories. And next May, from the 10th to the 17th, our itinerary will include some of my favorite places on the planet. And I'll be there to make sure that your travel experience is purely amazing. Imagine visiting incomparable Rome, Florence, Portofino, Provence, and breathtaking Barcelona. The ports will be spectacular, and your elegant suite with a private patio will astound you. Book now and get 2-for-1 fares, free round-trip air, $200 shipboard credit, plus you pay nothing extra for wine, cocktails, shore excursions, even tips are included. For more information, click the link at grapeencounters.com. I've got a luxury cabin with your name on it. Click on the link now at grapeencounters.com.
Grape Encounters presents What We Heard Through the Grapevine. Today's top news, trends, and stories. Here's what we've encountered.
Good news blowing in your window. Good news is knocking on your door. Good news is coming round the corner. Good news roll around your floor.
It is time for the Grape Encounters news, and I have reluctantly filled the glass of our chief wine news correspondent, Lawrence Larry Gifford. And Larry, big news week or slow news week?
It's always a big news week here at the Grape Encounters wine news desk.
I don't even know what that means. Are you liking that wine?
I do like the wine.
Yeah?
What about
any? No. Are you kidding me?
Zinfandel?
No.
What is it?
It's a Petite Syrah.
Ooh.
It's in celebration of the fact that Sarah Schneider is going to be in here in just a little bit, and I thought I would try it out on you first because we're going to be talking about my two favorite wines, or at least two of my favorite wines that are not getting nearly enough attention, but I want them to get more, so that's it. But you're liking it, right?
I do like it. I enjoy it very much.
And what news stories do you like this week, Larry?
Well, speaking of wines not getting a lot of attention, Texas wines traditionally haven't gotten a lot of attention, but they're tasting better than ever, and experts are sitting up and taking notice.
Well, we pay attention to Texas.
Sure we do. In 2014, Texas held in 164 different medals in wine competitions compared to just 6 medals 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So the folks at CraveDFW.com note that most of the medals were gained at the San Francisco International Wine Competition, the San Francisco Chronicle Wine Competition, the Finger Lakes International Wine Competition, the LA International Wine Competition, and the San Diego International Wine Competition. And 2 are from the Lyon International Wine Competition in France.
Those are some very credible competitions.
Sure. So kudos to them.
Let's get some of that Texas lots of wine drinkers in Texas, and I'm very proud that we are now heard in one of Texas's biggest cities, San Antonio.
All right. Yes.
Pleased to be there, by the way. So good for Texas, you know? I've had some very good wines from Texas, and I'm looking forward. We're actually going to go out there with microphones in hand and going to be doing some special reports from Texas in really a matter of weeks.
Excellent. Can't wait for that.
All right. What else is there?
In Oregon, wine contributed $3.35 billion to that state's economy.
That's a lot. It's a small state.
Yeah. Full Glass Research out of Berkeley conducted the study for the state's wine board. The report also notes that Oregon wine grapes are now the state's most valuable crop.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No. They have a cash crop that has got to be bigger.
What are you smoking?
All right. Let's not get into it.
The industry employs just under 10,000 workers, and wine sales are up 39% since 2011.
I'm going to tell you something, too. There aren't many bad wines made in Oregon.
No. There's some good wines.
Very good wines in Oregon. Kudos to Oregon. We should go there right after Texas.
Yes. For 100 years or so now, you could like wine or you could like ice cream, but it never seemed appropriate to pair them together.
Oh, you're not going to put a scoop of ice cream in your glass of wine, are you?
I'm not.
Okay.
But wine ice cream is gaining traction.
You know what? I've heard this story a couple of times, not this particular story. I forget where it was, but there's one state where they had a dickens of a time because they were trying to get wine ice cream approved. Mm. And I don't know who regulates it in that particular state, but they said, no, you can't put wine in ice cream.
Well, you can get it in New York City and North Carolina. Mercer's Dairy in New York and Green Creek Winery in North Carolina both touting white ice cream.
And we are also heard in North Carolina as well.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Flavors at Mercer's in New York include Cherry Merlot, Spice Peach White Zinfandel, Port Red Raspberry Chardonnay, Riesling Chocolate Cabernet, and Strawberry Sparkling. And then at Green Creek, it's Icy Red Raspberry Sauvignon Blanc, Red Grape with Pinot Noir, Chocolate Merlot,
wow.
Strictly Strawberry with Chardonnay, and Southern Peach with Riesling.
Wow, they're taking this very seriously.
Oh, they are. Up to 5% alcohol in each scoop, so you got to be careful about how much you eat. And David, you encourage everyone to play with their wine.
Yes.
And truth be told, most wine pros are a little quirky about things. And we have two stories today that shows the playful side of wine experts. The folks at WineMag.com asked experts for their unique palate cleansing tips.
Unique palate cleansing tips.
Yes. You ready for this?
Okay.
So Michael Schaschner, the contributing editor at Wine Enthusiast, likes to clean his palate with pineapple.
What?
Yeah. He says the key is to bite into a slightly underripe slice.
Yuck.
And you want the pineapple to be crunchy and firm and not rock hard, and the fruit should be white, not yellow.
That's torture. You know, there's nothing worse than underripe pineapple. And besides,
but it scours away the tannic buildup.
Yeah, but it's totally acidic, and that doesn't sound right to me. All right. We'll try it.
Kevin Zraley, the author of Windows of the World Complete Wine Course, recommends red meat. Yes.
Raw?
Well, no, I think you cook it. The fat and protein of the
beef. Like carpaccio or something like that?
Well, that'd be nice. I'd like that. But he says the fat and protein of the beef absorb the tannins in the wine, so it cleanses your mouth.
Makes more sense. You eat the pineapple, I'll eat the beef.
I'll have some beef, too.
Okay, all right.
Now on to pairing wines and junk food. The folks at Forbes asked wine experts to weigh in on it, sort of a true confessions.
Why does Forbes do this study?
Well, you know.
The Forbes readers aren't eating junk food, I don't think.
Maybe they are.
All right, so what do
secretly,
we got?
Secretly, behind closed doors, Tootsie Rolls with Cabernet Sauvignon.
What?
That's Virginia Phillip, master sommelier and wine director at the Breakers Palm Beach, loves his Tootsie Rolls with a fruity Spanish red or a Cabernet. Yeah, Molly Hill, winemaker at Sequoia Grove, her one and only recommendation to get maximum pleasure out of the bottle of Sequoia Grove Cabernet is sea salt and vinegar potato chips.
Sea salt and, well, that sounds pretty good. I'm not pairing cab with Tootsie Roll.
Okay.
It doesn't matter how renowned the somm is who's recommending that
and
to
here's
me.
Here's a somm.
I'm going
house.
Back to the red meat. Okay,
the somm at the Strip House in New York City.
The Strip House? A strip joint?
No, it's a steakhouse. French fries and vintage champagne. Tater tots are even better.
tater tots.
I love it.
Tater tots are making a huge comeback, and I don't know if we're allowed to use the term tater tot. I think Orida or somebody like that has the market cornered on that, but a lot of chefs making gourmet tater tots. And yeah, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, doesn't that sound good?
Anything else?
That is the news as we see it today, David.
You know what? I asked you at the beginning if it was a slow news week, and you said no.
I said it's never a slow news week here at the Grape Encounters.
It's a slow news week when we're talking about pairing Tootsie Rolls and Cabernet Sauvignon.
For shame, David. That is serious business.
And yes, we will talk about Petit Verdot and Petit Syrah with Sarah Schneider, wine editor of Sunset Magazine. In the meantime, we're going to have some special messages for you while Larry finishes up his glass of Petit Syrah and vacates the seat. If you have a thirst for wine knowledge, be it trivia or the latest trends, there's a website that's overflowing with content that we've created just for you. It's GrapeEncounters.com, where you'll find literally hundreds upon hundreds of stories and interviews covering almost every topic imaginable. From the world's most colorful and renowned winemakers to unforgettable wine adventures, there's something for every wine lover at GrapeEncounters.com. Go ahead, log on, uncork, pour, swirl, and sip.
Choosing a gift bottle of wine for a wine lover can be tricky, but choosing a wine accessory that the wine enthusiast in your life will really love is a snap when you log on to GrapeEncounters.com. At GrapeEncounters.com, you'll find our top 10 gift-giving picks for wine lovers, and everyone is sure to be a hit. From exotic openers to wine toolkits and even breathalyzers to ensure safety, we've got plenty of inspiration for you. If you're looking for a wine-related gift for someone special, even yourself, get inspired at GrapeEncounters.com.
This is David Wilson, and I want you to sail with me from Rome to Barcelona on one of the most luxurious cruise ships in the world, the completely reimagined Regent Seven Seas Mariner. Every year, I take listeners on a luxury voyage sure to create unforgettable memories. And next May, from the 10th to the 17th, our itinerary will include some of my favorite places on the planet. And I'll be there to make sure that your travel experience is purely amazing. Imagine visiting incomparable Rome, Florence, Portofino, Provence, and breathtaking Barcelona. The ports will be spectacular, and your elegant suite with a private patio will astound you. Book now and get 2-for-1 fares, free round-trip air, $200 shipboard credit, plus you pay nothing extra for wine, cocktails, shore excursions, even tips are included. For more information, click the link at GrapeEncounters.com. I've got a luxury cabin with your name on it. Click on the link now at GrapeEncounters.com.
Giving you permission to do things with wine that you never dreamed of. Your Grape Encounter continues with David Wilson and a little help from his friends.
Information overload. I won't leave until the story's told. All gone in a flash of light. I just need 10,000 gigabytes. It's hard to consume so much information, but we die trying to resist this temptation.
And we are back with Grape Encounters Radio, and I must tell you that my wife and I both have apps on our telephones, but I think I've got a whopping like maybe 20 apps on my phone, and she's got something like 300 apps. She is the app keeper of the family, but of all of the apps that she has on the phone, the one that she uses the most is my favorite wine app, which is Vivino. It is an absolutely astounding application, and Vivino has this enormous community of wine lovers on now. They're the number one wine app in the world, and they have just released their list of top 100 wines, and actually they've got a couple of different top 100 lists, and we're going to dive into that. I am so pleased, really excited to have on Heine Zacharias, and he is the COO, CEO, and founder of the company. It is a behemoth storage of wine information, and Heine, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Very pleased to be here.
So tell me about the origin, first of all, of Vivino, because I remember seeing it some years ago and experimenting with it. In fact, when wine apps were first coming out, I think you were really very much on the forefront of those apps. And I remember playing with it and recommending it to listeners, but I can't even imagine how small it was then compared to how big it is now.
Yeah, for sure. So really, my problem was that when I walked into a grocery store in Copenhagen 5-6 years ago, I just saw this wall of wine. And I loved wine and still, of course, love wine. But my problem was I did not know what to buy. So when I wanted to watch a good movie, I would go to, you know, Internet Movie Database or Rotten Tomatoes. But I couldn't really find a source for information on the wine. I wanted all these wines to be rated so somebody could tell me what was good and what was not so good. And that's really sort of the background of the project, was me personally being a little bit, honestly, a little bit clueless on wine and needing some help on that.
So were you a wine lover or were you just a casual wine drinker?
No, I was definitely a wine lover, very much a lover, but a lack of information. I really didn't know a lot about wine. Of course, I worked in the business for a few years now, so I do know a little bit more now. But back then, I just loved drinking wine, but didn't really know what was good and what was bad and varietals and so on. I wasn't very good at it. So a little bit confused lover.
Well, that really is the problem, isn't it? Because there are tons of wine lovers, people who really appreciate fine wine, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're a wine expert. You can appreciate it, but not know about it. And we now live in a world where there are literally tens of thousands of labels available to people who drink wine. And I'd say for most people, 99% of those wines are a mystery.
Yeah, completely. And we wanted to help those people create some transparency so they know what's in there, so they can see a bottle of wine and really see what other people felt about that wine.
And you're really about looking at the opinions of consumers and experiences of consumers and not the wine experts who so many wine lovers really loathe.
Yeah. So, yeah, it looks like when consumers do ratings, it's actually pretty good, too. You know, we know these experts, they know all about it. But our philosophy is really that we think that sort of the peer-to-peer people that are like me might actually have more in common with me than somebody who tastes 100 wines every single week. So we really believe in our ratings. I think they're good for ordinary wine drinks.
Well, for one thing, those ordinary wine drinkers speak the same language. And the person who is, you know, writing for a major wine magazine speaks a very different language, which sometimes the average consumer just doesn't understand.
Yeah. Some people might even find it a little bit intimidating. So we really want to be there for the ordinary wine drinker.
Okay. So how big is the database now?
Yeah. So the database is very, very big. So we have 5 million different wines in the database now.
Oh, my gosh.
It's huge, from 180,000 different wineries. And we now have 100 million pictures of wine. So, of course, I'm different, but we've had over 100 million pictures taken of wine right now. So a lot of information.
You've got to have a computer system that could run a small country.
Yes, for sure. It is quite big by now.
So how many members of the Vivino community are we talking about?
Yeah, so we just crossed 8 million members now, and we're actually getting 20,000 new members every single day.
So no!
Yes.
20,000 new members are joining Vivino every single day?
Yes.
Holy smoke. And 8 million people in the community. So you've got all of these eyes, or shall I say, palates out there that are doing the work for you.
Which is amazing, right?
It's incredibly amazing.
And
wow.
To give you an idea about how much people use it, so Christmas is, of course, big for us. So our biggest day was Christmas Day, where we, for the first time ever, had over 1 million bottles of wine scanned through the Vivino in one day.
1 million bottles. Have you ever had a crash?
Yes, especially in the early days. And we've had a little bit of overload once in a while. So fingers crossed it won't happen again. But sometimes it grows pretty fast.
So you've got to have a whole bunch of redundancy to make sure that data is not lost.
Yeah, for sure.
I take it you don't just send it up to Apple's iCloud.
No, not quite.
Okay. All right, so let's jump into the list for a second, because this is a list of a very different kind, because you're taking ratings, I guess, from the consumers. And as I understand it, unless a wine has received at least 100 ratings or reviews, it would not be considered on the list.
Yes, that's correct. And that's 100 ratings or reviews within the year of 2014.
Okay. So the first observation that I made, first you have the top 100 list, period.
Yeah.
And what was astounding to me was how many wines were on that list that are, from a financial standpoint, really not approachable.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's definitely an interesting one. Maybe it tells us that there is some kind of connection between price and, you know, the quality of the wine, at least how people see it, right?
So right.
People rate these wines very, very high. That's what we know for sure now, at least, that they do appreciate that and rate them high. I'm not saying that it's worth the money, because you might pay a lot of money for the last few points there, but at least there's some value to it.
Yeah, definitely. But it would seem almost counterintuitive that somebody who has the financial wherewithal to purchase those wines is actually sitting down and taking the time to enter the data into a wine app, because, you know, those tend to be people who are probably a bit more wine savvy and are more independent in their decision-making process. So that's what really surprised me, because that data had to get in there from somebody, and yeah, they had to be pretty successful people that are using the app.
So I think they might actually have a different agenda. Some of them, of course, might be sharing what they're drinking and so on, but also they want to remember what they liked about this wine. There are also selfish reasons to, I'm not saying they're selfish, but there are reasons to use the app just to looking forward and say, you know, I like this wine, I like this style of wine, and so on. So that could be why they do it too.
Okay, so the other observation that I made was a surprisingly low number of amazing California wines, and those that were in the top 100s on the various lists tended to be, first of all, in the red wines, Pinot. And then some of the, other wines that dominated the categories were wines like Opus One that are well known, you know, sort of high end, but not necessarily the highest end wines. It was the absence of the boutique wines, especially from California, that I noticed.
Yeah, it could, of course. So we do have the bar of 100 rating. It might play a role on that one. And of course, the more user we get, the more likely that is. That could be it. It's really hard for us to say what the actual reason is for that. And it could also be because a lot of it's consumed in California, and our app is, of course, global. And maybe the California wine doesn't get as much out as the French and Spanish stuff.
Yeah, a very large percentage of French wines, which, by the way, I think is a good thing, because, wines from France, Spain, Portugal, you know, here in America, we may not be as familiar with those wines, and actually they tend to be pretty affordable. You can get some great wines for a great price.
Yeah.
So I think that really provides a lot of really good information to Americans when it comes to imports.
Yeah, definitely. And there are a lot of French and Spanish wines on the list. We were a little bit surprised by number one. If you saw the Vega Cecilia from Spain was number one. Kind of surprised.
Yeah, I was very surprised to see that. And really, there were a lot of surprises on here, but a lot of wines that I'm, you know, personally not familiar with and excited to go out and try. Now, can I actually know how many people actually rated these wines? Yeah, I could just click on the wine, right?
Yes, you can. You can, and you will see the total number of ratings, not necessarily number of ratings in 2014, but it gives you a clear indication. So if you look at number one, for instance, 300 people have rated it, so have a pretty solid rating on that one.
So how do you recommend people use this list? And, you know, it would be impossible. You have a top 100 red wine list, and then you have a top 100 wines under $50, which is a great list. And then you have the top 100 white lists. And obviously, we can't go through 300 wines here in the short time that we have. But just direct people to where they can get to this data. And of course, if you're not a member of Vivino, you want to get that app.
Sure. And it's available free on my phone and Android, and actually a Windows phone too. So anyone can go and get it while they listen to this wonderful show.
How do you make any money by giving it away?
Yeah, so we've focused everything on growth, really making this the biggest wine app in the world. We are now moving into what we call the monetization, starting to make money off this. We think the long-term vision for this company is help people find their next wine. So we do not want to be a merchant directly, but we would like to point towards these merchants and say, hey, you can buy this wine here locally, which is a service for all our users, of course, but we will make a few bucks every time people click out to buy a wine from a merchant. We really think that's going to be our model.
That's amazing. We're talking to Heine Zachariasen. He's the founder of Vivino, the number one wine app in the world. I tell you what, this is such great information. We have such a great time, although it does slow down the wine drinking process for me personally. So I do want to complain about that, because my wife will not let me actually sit down and enjoy the wine until I have given her an opinion until she's photographed the bottle, you know, the whole thing. All right, now you can enjoy your wine. But it's a very reliable app. There's some amazing information on there. So to find the top 100 list, and I think you also have a top 100 sparkling list as well, don't you?
We do. We certainly do, which was pretty interesting. If you look at that list, it was very, very heavy on brand names. I don't know if you have in front of you, but there are Moët Chandon, Louis Roederer, and the Paul Rocher. You know, it's very much dominated by very well-known names, which was not the case with the other ones. So that we found a little bit interesting.
I imagine the Brain Trust over at Vivino is going to be digging deep into this list and maybe making some observations as the days go on. Is that correct?
Yeah, very much. Just trying to understand this, right? Because we just take the numbers out and put it in front of people and say, this is what it is. And now let's try and figure it out.
Yeah, I think even a lot of wine scholars are going to be looking at this one, because I would imagine that this list represents the single largest voting opportunity to choose wines from the world wine public.
I think it does. I think this is the first time ever a list like this has been made, because we will include any wine in the world. So if a merchant does it, he will take his own wine. And if Wine Spectator does it, you know, it will be subjective to that person that actually does the list. This is the people's choice very much. This is what people love to drink in 2014.
One last little sidebar. If you're looking at and you enjoy boutique wines and you don't see them on this list, then you still need to go on the app and find that wine, because those boutique wines aren't as accessible to other people, but you'll get some good information on those as well. So use the list to discover some amazing wines, and use the app to discover some lesser known wines that are going to be equally or even more delicious.
Yeah, very much so.
All right. Hey, listen, Heine, it is such a pleasure to have you on. Heine Zachariasen, the founder of Vivino, without a doubt, my choice as the number one wine app in the world. I just want to make sure people know where they can find this information.
Yeah, just go to vivino.com. You'll find the list there.
Okay. Hey, listen, thanks very much for being on the show. Great information and a great service to the wine community. So can't thank you enough.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. We'll be back in just a moment talking about some of the up-and-coming wines with Sunset Magazine wine editor Sarah Schneider. Stay with us.
Do, 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 do. Wine.
If you have a thirst for wine knowledge, be it trivia or the latest trends, there's a website that's overflowing with content that we've created just for you. It's grapeencounters.com, where you'll find literally hundreds upon hundreds of stories and interviews covering almost every topic imaginable. From the world's most colorful and renowned winemakers to unforgettable wine adventures, there's something for every wine lover at grapeencounters.com. Go ahead, log on, uncork, pour, swirl, and sip.
Choosing a gift bottle of wine for a wine lover can be tricky, but choosing a wine accessory that the wine enthusiast in your life will really love is a snap when you log on to grapeencounters.com. At grapeencounters.com, you'll find our top 10 gift-giving picks for wine lovers, and everyone is sure to be a hit. From exotic openers to wine toolkits and even breathalyzers to ensure safety, we've got plenty of inspiration for you. If you're looking for a wine-related gift for someone special, even yourself, get inspired at grapeencounters.com.
This is David Wilson, and I want you to sail with me from Rome to Barcelona on one of the most luxurious cruise ships in the world, the completely reimagined Regent Seven Seas Mariner. Every year, I take listeners on a luxury voyage sure to create unforgettable memories. And next May, from the 10th to the 17th, our itinerary will include some of my favorite places on the planet. And I'll be there to make sure that your travel experience is purely amazing. Imagine visiting incomparable Rome, Florence, Portofino, Provence, and breathtaking Barcelona. The ports will be spectacular, and your elegant suite with a private patio will astound you. Book now and get 2-for-1 fares, free round-trip air, $200 shipboard credit, plus you pay nothing extra for wine, cocktails, shore excursions, even tips are included. For more information, click the link at grapeencounters.com. I've got a luxury cabin with your name on it. Click on the link now at grapeencounters.com.
Like certain wines, he's syrupy, sweet, and has long legs. Here's David Wilson.
Wine. it was the world's record grape stomp. It happened in Jamestown, New York, at the Lucy Desi Center for Comedy. Jamestown, of course, being the home of Lucille Ball. We had Journey Gunderson on, who's the executive director of that center. They blocked off, I think it was a couple of blocks, Larry, and then they filled it with grapes. Guess where they got the grapes from?
Where?
Guess.
Grapevines?
Oh, no. They got it from Welch's.
Oh, really? That's great.
No, that's grape, Larry.
Oh, David.
It's probably the single most iconic moment in television or the movies having to do with wine. It's been something that's been repeated at wineries all over the world for years and years and years. It's the iconic scene with Lucille Ball stomping grapes and the Lucy Desi Center for Comedy in Jamestown, New York. Take that scene and Lucille Ball's comedy very seriously. On the line with us now is Journey Gunderson. She is the executive director of the Lucy Desi Center and the National Comedy Center. And Journey, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is so amazing. You had 1,232 people there, and tell us what they did.
Sure. We got 1,232 people to participate in setting a new Guinness World Record for most people grape stomping, which involved 60 tons of locally grown Concord grapes in a vat that we built that was about the size of a city block.
No, really?
Yes.
Let's start with the vat. How do you build a vat that's a city block long?
With the help of Artone Manufacturing, a company that's local to Jamestown here. The owner happens to be a board member on the National Comedy Center board. So he built the walls, and we actually, the base of the vat, we just used 2nd Street in downtown Jamestown and worked closely with the city on this. And we knew the existing record was 977 people held by a small city in northern Spain. And we've been celebrating Lucille Ball here in her hometown for decades. But as part of our mission to celebrate comedy in Jamestown, we wanted to do this to pay tribute to one of the most iconic comedy scenes. You mentioned it was one of the most iconic wine-related scenes in entertainment history, but it's certainly also one of the most iconic comedy scenes in TV history. Lucille Ball playing Lucy Ricardo, stomping grapes.
Okay, so the pavement was the bottom of the vat then?
That's correct.
I don't think that's ever been done in the wine industry.
No. I mean, our streets are clean, but I don't know if they're that clean.
Okay. So I take it that the grapes that were stomped were not used for wine.
That's correct. We thought that the health department might have a problem with that.
No, the alcohol in the wine will kill all the germs. That wasn't a problem. I could have helped you with that.
Yeah. Well, we do have some commemorative bottles of Stomped with Care wine directly from Jamestown, New York, made with our own Concord grapes. So you can contact the Lucy Desi Center for how to get one of those world record release bottles.
Oh, fantastic. Now, let's talk about the Spanish for a second, because they held the record. And before I got you on the line, I tried to find any evidence of any riots in Spain over this. But I guess the Spanish took it pretty well. Or have you gotten any hate mail from Spain?
Not yet, and I have to admit I'm really smiling as you say that, because in the weeks leading up I kind of thought, hey, maybe we should start some friendly overseas trash talk over this thing and let them know what we're doing and that we intend to break their record. But then wisely I thought, well, that could go really badly if we have a cold day and a bunch of people decide not to show up and for some reason the record doesn't get broken. I mean, it went so smoothly and people had such a fun time, but behind the scenes, in the planning of it, there were a lot of things we were concerned with and just wanted to make sure it went well. So I thought better of starting kind of an online trash talk session with Spain until I knew that we were going to break the record. So
Journey,
Spain, if you're listening, we congratulate you on having set it in 2012. Unfortunately, now Jamestown holds the title.
All right, I'm going to give you the opportunity now, Journey, to say na 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 na.
I don't know how that translates into Spanish.
It's universal. Go for it.
Is there an enye over the N? It would be na 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 na.
There you go.
I love how you have so much fun with wine on this show. And talking to people like Journey Gunderson just reminds you about how much fun the wine lifestyle can be. And also, you talk about wine and like Lucille Ball. Wine also made its way into the movies this year with Ian Cobble and that documentary Psalm.
You know what? I'll tell you what. Wine movies are getting a lot of attention. I think it all started with Sideways, which, of course, changed the way we think and drink. But there was a character on a movie who was actually playing himself. The movie was Psalm, as you said. Ian Cobble really became a star out of that movie. There were five guys that were competing to become Psalms, not against each other, but against themselves. And Ian was the only one actually that didn't make it, but he came back, fought hard, became a Psalm, and he's become a really high-profile character. And, of course, we had to have him on the show. I'm talking to Ian Cobble. He is the star of Psalm. And if you haven't seen the movie, definitely check it out. If you're a wine lover, it is a must-see because you will learn so much from watching that movie. One of the things that I learned, Ian, was that you started drinking wine and identifying wine characteristics as a kid. How old was that?
Yeah, you know, I started when I was 5, 6, 7 years old. My dad would just give me wines and have me smell it and taste it. And, you know, I wasn't necessarily even thinking about what I was doing. You know, my dad would, you know, let me taste cigars or a good beer or something like that. I don't even remember it. I didn't even know that footage had been taken until I was sitting in the movie theater watching it. My dad gave it to the director without even asking me. Which
I was just wondering whether the other teens, as you were growing up, were jealous when you uncorked a Cabernet in the cafeteria.
Yeah, no, I would usually hide it in a water bottle or something. You know, they thought I was drinking Welch's. You know, they didn't know I was drinking classified Bordeaux.
Right? Was there any fear in your family that your parents would be arrested for serving a minor?
No. They have a very European view of life. I mean, if you're in Europe, you grow up in France, you're getting wine at the dinner table watered down. You know, alcohol was never something that my parents, you know, made me afraid of or, you know, even, in, you know, wanted me to drink. It was just a part of our daily life, and they had me taste it. And I think that's why you don't run away from home looking to go, you know, drink a bunch of vodka when you get to college, because, you know, I don't look at it as something you have to go out and have. It's always been a part of our life, and I think that's the better way of looking at it.
Amen to that, I'll tell you. And I think even more so today, the kids are not running off and sneaking booze like they used to. You know, when I was a kid, it was like scoring something from mom and dad's liquor cabinet was a pretty big deal.
I still did do that.
So, David, at the end of the Grape Encounters Vintage 2014, take a sip of it. How would you describe this year for you?
You just threw me out of the loop. You know, Larry, that's like asking what's your favorite wine. You know, seriously, I would say that 2014, when it comes to Grape Encounters Radio, was absolutely the perfect blend.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody.